This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 421, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 421. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Ooh, and Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
We are iFanboy.
Gotta do the voice.
And we like comics, and everyone can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best book they read. They call that the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book on the show, along with the other books of the week, other topics of interest, other fun stuff, goofy nonsense, idiocy, a lot of idiocy, let's be fair. Before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning, it's a review show. There'll be some spoilers, especially in this episode. So if you haven't read your books, pause the show and come back. Everyone will be happier. There'll be a lot less griping on Twitter, which is really all we're trying to minimize in our lives at this point. Paul!
Yes?
You had the pick.
I did. I went with Thor God of Thunder, number 18.
Were you surprised?
Did you guys, were you ever in a D.A.R.E. program?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe we were early. I don't know if that happened to you, Connor, because you're the city.
We didn't. I wasn't in the program, but I knew what D.A.R.E. was. We had the cop come and show us the briefcase of drugs.
I mean, at that point in New York City, that was a vital part of the economy. To be fair,
In all honesty, when I was a kid, I would play soccer in Riverside Park, and we would be playing on top of broken vials of crack. So it wasn't like it's a little different in New York.
First heard the term crack on Donahue.
One of the things that they don't talk about in D.A.R.E., or at least when I had it in fourth grade, was to drag in responsibly.
Right.
And so this is sort of a public service thing, you know, from Jason Aaron and the amazing Spanish artist Das Pastores.
Holy shit.
He's
amazing.
Really good. Apparently.
Holy shit.
Apparently has done some work for Marvel. As I said, Spanish artist. He's done some stuff with Jodorowsky, some European comics and like Inkle kind of stuff. And but he did some stuff at Marvel a few years ago, like a Punisher story and a Wolverine story, and you can go look those up. And they look amazing. But he's been gone for a while and he came back to do this issue of Thor God of Thunder.
Where, it's a one-shot issue.
Yeah, sort of a one-shot before the next major arc and the return of Esad Ribic, who's also amazing.
And the return of Old King Thor.
Old King Thor and some other stuff. And it's...
This is the young Thor with Yarnbjorn.
Yarnbjorn, the axe. And he meets... There's a lot of great terms. Like, there's Scabgag, the dragon, who is... It starts in Scabgag's mouth. How many times, I mean, Connor, you have a substance abuse problem. How many times have you woken up in a friend's mouth the next day?
Like, listen.
Well, let's not. Okay. Comic-Con 2002 was maybe a different situation, but I think it's time for us to move. Oh.
So this, I thought this was great. The main thrust of the story is that the people of what is it? Where are we?
Faroe Islands.
The Faroe Islands in 894 AD have prayed
Vikings.
Thor.
Yeah,
the she Vikings. They're all female Vikings. Have prayed for Thor to come save them from this dragon, who has been eating their
the dogs.
And so we wake up after Thor has, I guess, fought the dragon. There's a But we learn it's actually not the dragon doing these things. It's actually a bunch of trolls, and the dragon is just hanging out.
Just hanging out, and Thor comes up. Yarnbjorn ends up in his nose, basically. But this is all after, you know, it was a big misunderstanding. Scabgrag didn't eat the dogs. He doesn't even like dogs. He was eating some whales, which I guess are fair game. Nobody has whales for pets. And so he decided, let's hang out, let's drink, and they got their drink on, and they basically took out all the trolls that were responsible for eating the dogs, and he woke up in the dragon's mouth, and that was just a party foul, basically.
It's a big case of
mistaken identity. They just assume dragons around. He probably is eating the dogs, so they're friends, gracious. And then they go back. And
he's a good guy, this dragon.
He's a good guy. And Heimdall is like, what are you doing hanging out with dragons and getting drunk and, you know, waking up in your loincloth at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon? What's going on? And the dragon goes home, and his dragon dad is like, you shouldn't be hanging out with people and messing with trolls and drinking. And he's like, screw you, dad. And he's like banished. And then he gets so drunk, and he goes on a tear, and he actually does start, you know, menacing the Faroe Island society.
Well, it's all a drunken mistake. He takes one of the shield maidens dancing, and as he is a dragon, he accidentally kills her in his hands, mm-hmm. which then it's sort of a sad. Actually, it's a very sad ending because then he since he did kill the shield maiden, then he ate her head after she was dead.
He just popped her head right off like a Keebler Elf cookie.
Thor then had no choice but to kill his friend with Yarnbjorn, which he did.
Yeah, and I like that they you know, did all these offerings and, you know, prayed in the nude, and it, like, took him forever, and he finally showed, because he has this drinking problem, and he, you know, comes in, and he's like, no, this guy is my, you know, my friend, he's a good guy, he's not causing any problems, but no, he's causing a lot of problems, and the dragon has a different idea of what their relationship is. Right. And is like Thor's like, I'm not going to allow you to do that. And so he does have to kill him. And at the end, he pours out his, you know, his goblet of mead. Yeah. And this is, I guess, the point where he's getting more towards the modern Thor, the Avenger. And he's responsible. He understands what the drinking does. He still gets his drink on in the modern
sure.
day. But, you know, it's certain times of the year, you know, when it's appropriate. And it's no longer a problem. It's not a huge part of his life anymore.
I thought this did really well with show the range of Jason Aaron's stories in specifically in this Thor book, in that it's fun, it's funny, there's adventure, there's action, and there's a real sort of genuinely emotional, sad moment in it. I thought it sort of runs the gamut, and it shows you just how great the work that's being done in this book is.
And
so he's really good at doing these one shot in between the story arcs, which I really
like. The last one was great too, where it's Thor's day in Midgard, between things and meeting up with various normal citizens. But this was excellent. I liked going back to see young Thor. Maybe after the next one, it'll be an old King Thor story, an old King Thor one shot. That would be kind of fun. But the art on this was what put it over the top. I was not familiar with Das Pastoris before. I certainly am now. The color on this is incredible. Just looking at the that panel where the mead is coming out of the goblet, and just mm-hmm. the texture of that and the color work. It's this great watercolor to it. On Twitter, when I announced that this was the pick of the week, I included that panel of Thor waking up in his bedroom, just totally out of it. And this is a wonderful mess. It's a bit sexy, yeah.
The Yarnborn stuck in the headboard, which is fun.
It's a little bit post-coital.
I don't feel
Thor.
Like he respects that axe that much.
He wants the hammer.
Part of it, you know, that leads into what's going on over in Uncanny Avengers. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you know, he keeps getting jokes about where the where the hammer is. Where's your hammer? And he hasn't earned it yet.
There's like a tiny, like cynical part of the rest of me that makes me think that there's an axe now because some Disney executive is like, hammers aren't cool. You should give him an axe. And so they've had this like directive to bring an axe into the story. I'm not saying that's what happened.
I don't know if Yarnbjorn is a big part of the lore, but I get it's really the utility of it is just that he's young and it's to show that he can't have Mjolnir yet.
Yeah, I like it as a device to show he's not yet ready to be Thor.
But he has to fight with something. There are other stories like young Thor, even at Marvel Comics, where he has a sword. And I think that is a name, but
there
but
was a Lamdring. Just kidding. That's Gandalf's sword.
I know what it is.
I know you do. There was a little line in here where somebody,
the faux hammer,
somebody said, why do you have, why don't you have red hair? And I was like, oh, that's nice. That's a nice little nod to actual Norse mythology because, the blonde Thor, that's just Kirby. That's, a lot of, it's funny because if you grow up with this as your Thor, and then you read like actual Thor folklore, things like that, you'll start to notice the differences, which isn't a bad thing, but I thought it was
nice. It's kind of fun seeing the discrepancies, and discrepancies don't have to be a negative thing.
No. It's mythology, for God's sakes.
Right.
So it's made the
it's not sacrilege. It's,
no, yeah.
It's fun.
Unless you believe it. I mean, I'm a Norsist. An Odinist.
I thought this was great. I really did. I was, it's becoming cliche to see this book continues to do excellent work, but it does. And I like the fact that the artists change, but the feel of the book doesn't really change all that much. Garney is probably the biggest departure, but this, this guy was very close to Ysad Ribic's similar style. So it felt really of a piece, which
and
is
I,
nice.
And I like that you can play with the lore and still just have fun with it, because it's like it's a funny issue. It's almost a slapstick issue. And when do you ever see a dragon that looks like that? That's it's not the classic St. George and the Dragon
scale thing.
It's dogish.
It looks like a dog, and he looks like he would spend his time in the sea. Which he does, eating whales.
I think the best part of this though was the here's what's coming up from Jason Aaron at the end.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "What was it?" He teased everything, and I think it was there's definitely old King Thor is coming back, and I think
King Thor versus Galactus.
There it is, old King Thor versus Galactus. I'm not all one to get all salivated about stuff, but that sounds great. I was like, I don't care what old King Thor's doing. I want to see that.
Right.
He's grizzled. I love grizzled characters. And he's grizzled.
He's got one eye. He's got one arm. He's great.
And he's just had enough of all the bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing.
Wonderful character.
Well, speaking of one eye, Saga 18 this week. This was the issue before the regular break they take. So it'll be another couple months till the next issue or 2 months or whatever it is.
Yeah. Little hate. That's fine.
This issue opens up with Lion Cat getting her. Is it a her? Is it him? Lion Cat getting its eye poked out by the mom.
We see its butt a lot. I don't know about genitals though. I don't know if it's a he or she.
Right.
Well, both males and females have butts.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah. Yep. Hmm. Yep. There's videos online you can use to verify that.
This was good. This was good. I'm running out of good things to say about
this. This was really strong, and I want to say that this is here on the list in this position because it was a very close runner up.
The thing that I read a couple of books this week, two of them from Image. I read a bunch of books, but two of them specifically from Image stood out to me for one reason, and we're going to talk about the other one later. But the first one was Saga 18, and it was because here's your spoiler if you're not reading it, but at the end of this book, there's a time jump. And I think that was exactly the right move that I didn't even know we needed.
Yes.
And it was okay, let's do the thing that they would do on a sitcom, where they're like, okay, there's the baby. Let's just kick the baby forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Temporarily.
Josh is a parent, by the way.
Not done as artfully as it's done here.
No.
Usually in the sitcoms, it's just between seasons. And
right.
Oh, but, all right.
I think that, you know, the idea, like, yes, they could do another 12 issues of them running away from people in space. But, I think the time jump
is good.
The time jump is a really good. I was like, oh, that's exactly the right move is what I thought immediately. And sort of the one thing we can do in comics that is easier here than anywhere else, because you can render anybody any age, is do an epoch shift. And you've told all the things you needed to about this era. And now there's going to be another one, and that's cool. I like that. We don't need to show every little step in between. I thought that was a great move. That's the issue was good, just like, you know, all the ones before it and everything. But at the end, I thought it just set up that change nicely, and I'm really looking forward to that next bit.
I think
it's not so far. This kid's not 13.
No, I think we'd been saying that, you know, this arc, it's really interesting how little amount of time transpires here. Like it doesn't feel like real time. This sort of makes up for it. Not that you needed to make up for it, but it helps move things forward.
It helps push the story forward. It had getting, I don't want to say repetitive, but you know, they were sort of stuck in that same situation for quite a long time.
It was static. And then so to have this jolt.
Yeah,
and plus you're going to have the little hiatus between now and the next arc, so we'll be all caught up. But it's nice to have a preview of that. Like so instead of doing that at the head of the next issue after 2 or 3 months or whatever, it's nice to put it here to say this is something to look forward to.
Yeah, right? I like that. I think that softens the blow, I guess, as it were, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because you're not sort of surprised by it. You have a thing to look forward to.
And you don't feel like
the other thing didn't finish.
Yeah, and then if it starts and she's a toddler and everybody has longer hair or whatever, you would think like, did I miss something?
So yeah, that's much more jarring.
I also like the idea that there could be other surprises that come along with this that have changed in that time, and sort of learning what those are is a lot of fun.
You can do anything. Anything can happen in a couple of years. And I like the device of the narration saying basically, yeah, you know, lots of stuff happened. We had lots of adventures. Mm-hmm. Some more close calls. You know, just sort of paper over it.
You can always go back to that stuff and little flashbacks when needed, but
or you don't need to. I mean, there's all kinds of adventures to be had.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. Now, Black Science number one was pick of the week. Two came out while we were off. This is issue 3 of Black Science. Rick Remender, Mateo Scalera, Dean White, Image Comics, and Black Science number one was my pick, and I liked 2 and 3 even more.
I was going to say exactly that. I think it's because
the characters are much more recognizable and well-rounded now that I have a better sense of what's actually happening.
It was very similar to when we talked about Deadly Class last week, where like it's a good chapter. Black Science, I could say, was arguably stronger.
But
it was the same idea. Like the first one was a bit of an intro. We don't know who anybody is. It's a cold open. 2 and 3, and I actually read them together.
I did too.
I had to catch up because 2 came out over the holidays, and that's how it works. It just cemented what the story was, who these people are, what they're going through, and it was really interesting. There was a lot of intermingling and different relationships going on, and the characters individually are really well-defined.
Guys, there's a mech in this issue. I really like those. There's a mech suit.
I'm not going to call it a Jaeger.
I'm a big fan. It's not a Jaeger.
So what we've learned is that there's this team, and you may have read the first issue or heard us talk about it, or you don't know. But to recap, there's a team of scientists who built this machine that can puncture through dimensions, and it's sort of, they call it peeling the onion back, the onion being the different dimensions that are out there, and trying to sort of, you know, explore and use that technology to gather science and technology and things that are in other dimensions and bring them back to their home dimension, you know, cure cancer, that kind of thing.
I.e. cheating.
Right. Or using science to solve the world's problems, perhaps.
Or cheating.
That's a better way to put it. And of course, this machine is sabotaged, and I can't say that word without thinking of Star Trek VI. Sabotaged. And they get stranded in a dimension, including not just the team, but also the lead scientist's 2 kids and their 2 administrative overlords.
It's funny how everybody ended up there. It's great because the McKay, what's his name? Not Dylan McKay, Grant McKay. which by the way, I mean Ian McKay. Ian McKay. I guess he spells it differently, but it just makes me think of a Minor Threat. Anyway, if you're out there and you know what I'm talking about, you know Rick Remender, you'll know what I'm talking about. But he makes a lot of bad decisions, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
A lot of poor decisions. and sort of...
Well, he's having an affair with his coworker.
He brought the kids. Bringing the kids was a bad call. But he does. He makes the bad decisions very with a bit of a cavalier attitude.
Right.
Yeah, it's fine. It's going to be all right. And there's like a ton of tension going on. I think the other thing that I really, really enjoy is alternate dimension stuff can become tedious and awful. But to me, an alternate World War One where they're fighting super techno Native Americans, that's all right. you see the German soldiers. Right. It's just mixing stuff that is all very, very interesting. I mean, this is science fiction.
Yeah.
No, Black, what a great title.
I think the tone is sort of summed up when somebody suggests that they're Dimensionauts, and then the other guy says, we're not calling it that.
Yeah.
That's pretty much where we're at.
Yeah. No, this was great. I really like this series a lot now. I mean, I like the first issue clearly, but these two were fantastic. Yep. Three included.
Some other big mad science going on over in Uncanny Avengers number 16 as well.
And the cover features Yarnbjorn.
Yep.
This future is about Yarnbjorn.
Yarnbjorn.
It's almost, this book is kind of it's like the unsung hero. Like every time it comes out, I feel like I'm reminded, like, this is really good.
Yeah.
You know, in the midst of, like, Remender's really, he's really putting out some quality work lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what was good about this issue is that I feel like it moved things forward. And after we've been fighting sort of, you know, straight for the past few, and it was just super actiony, and it was Thor going after Celestial. Yeah.
I like the scene a lot, the quiet scene where he finds Scarlet Witch's body
and closes
her eyes, and then that's when he really gets pissed, and then he really sort of unleashes the Thorness upon the Celestial, the Children of Kang. Mm-hmm. Or is it the Children of Apocalypse being manipulated
Apocalypse
by Kang?
Twins, you've killed my friend, and now you're blaming it all on this mistake I made, you know, back in the day. And I've had a lot of back in the days because I'm Thor and I'm really old. And
he cares not though.
This damn Yarnbjorn thing, this is a problem. But I'm gonna push your face into this portal thing, and you're gonna blow up.
And he's gonna burn his own arm off in the process. Here's a question. Why do Celestials have treads on their boots?
Well, they don't want to slip on the Celestial.
It feels
plane.
Like a very earthly concept.
I think it's a fashion thing.
Yeah. Like a lug.
It is weird.
I don't,
but, I do like this a lot. Steve McNiven's doing the art in this particular issue. It's hard to even predict who's going to draw it from issue to issue. But
they're all good, though.
They're all good artists, so... I just hesitate to say he's the artist now for this, you know.
What's funny is that when I was reading this, I thought I was about halfway through it when I was like, hey, who is this artist? But I didn't immediately think it was Steve McNiven. I guess because maybe it wasn't inked by Dexter Vines.
No, but you do see the sort of Steve McNiven cross-hatching, which is making me laugh for reasons that no one will get but Josh and Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the Steve McNiven you see from Old Man Logan or anything, or those cap issues, so it's a little different.
But, do you think LA Gear is the official clothier of Celestials?
LA Gear? Could be.
So they all have lights.
I mean, it wasn't in 86. Absolutely.
Were you wearing those at your D.A.R.E. program?
Was I? Oh, yeah. I definitely had one or two pairs of LA Gear. I know I threw up on the first pair.
What were those shoes that you put the coins in, Josh? You know what
Jesus.
I'm talking about. They have little Velcro pockets on the sides.
Ruse?
Yes, like kangaroos.
Yeah, kangaroos.
Yeah, you can put like
you could
a quarter.
Never get that quarter out.
No.
What about BK Knights with Dimacells? That was always a prize on Nickelodeon. Get those shoes.
I remember those.
Yeah.
No one was ever fooled by BK Knights.
The hell's
no
a Dimacell?
It was like on the bottom. There was like a rubbery bit that shaped like a diamond. It didn't do anything.
Okay.
It's now... Another book that came out while we were on breaks, The Saviors from Image Comics, James Robinson and Jay Bone. This is issue 2. And The Saviors is the story of a stoner named Tomas, who has discovered that the people of his town, or at least some of the people of his town, are actually alien, lizard, dragon people.
It's and, like V.
It's kind of like V if a lot more weed was involved.
Okay.
And I kind of like it. I kind of like the goofiness of it.
I didn't make it to this because I think I didn't think it was this week, so I thought I was out.
Is it like Mars Attacks or? Like,
I love the J-Bone art. He's great. He's he does sort of cartoony style, and he's a great storyteller. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I like
he's done a lot
J-Bone.
Of work with Darwin Cook. The first issue I thought was stronger. It was this issue, kind of just one long chase scene. It's actually a really nice sequence that takes place over 7.5 pages of silent. It's a silent sequence of just being chased by this creature. But the first issue I thought was really funny. I thought it had great character stuff. So far, there isn't a lot to go on here other than there's just this stoner burnout who's discovered this thing that no one else knows about, that there's aliens, and he's on the run from them. And it's kind of funny and fun. It's really fun. So check it out if that sounds fun to you. I think it's great. It's black and white.
When number 3 comes out, I'm going to be caught up.
Yeah. Okay.
I proclaim this. There was a lot of – I had to read like twice as many books this week to try to get caught up.
Yeah.
This was the week
this
that
was
matched
the week that matched
week.
Up
yeah,
with –
yeah,
week
we were –
yeah.
But the J-Bone art's really, really good.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's he's got a lot of it's just nice cartoony style.
Now, speaking of both Crazy and James Robinson, Earth 2 Annual Number 1, this is Robinson's former book. Paul, did you drop off this?
I'm off.
Okay.
I can't.
So now we had Justin Jordan. Is that his name? I'm trying to get
no.
this.
You did that last time.
I don't. It's in my head that that's the name of the guy. And
it's Tom Taylor.
Tom Taylor, right. The guy who does.
He's the character in Unwritten.
Right.
He's writing his own comic book.
I'm trying to get this to load, but the DC app is slow. So this is the issue where we find out Batman's identity. And we find out that Batman in Earth 2 is crazy heroin addict Thomas Wayne.
They've already done that.
But not crazy drug addict Thomas
Okay,
Wayne.
So Bruce Wayne was Batman in Earth 2. And he died along with Superman and Wonder Woman.
He died.
But
not
so
before
now
discovering that his father wasn't actually killed. His father was in with these drug dealers. He was supplying them with drugs from his hospital. By the way, if you are a person who really looks up to Thomas Wayne as a character, as a you know, like the from the Batman movies and all, like, don't read this.
Are there people like that? I mean, I like the character, but I don't. It's like
Thomas Wayne is.
I won't be crestfallen to find out that.
Well, he's
in an alternate reality.
Paul, he tells you to stand up when you've fallen.
He true. So did Captain America's mother. By the way, now.
So did Michael Caine about a million times in that movie, just
well,
reprising
the
moment.
He was parroting Thomas's advice. Anyway, the point
why
is.
Why do they do me 4 down, sir?
Bruce finds out that his father wasn't actually killed in the alley. He was, in fact, saved by Leslie Tompkins, and they switched bodies in the morgue, and he was an addict, and he was actually not a heroin addict. That was a joke. He's addicted to Miracle-O. So what they've done here is they have combined Batman and Our Man into one character, or sort of one character. I mean, there is a Rex Mason, but it's not. He's not. Basically, you've got Batman who is on Miracle-O, so he's stronger and all that stuff. But he's also an addict. He can't not use it. Also, Martha Wayne was like a little drug dealer party floozy when he met her. So that was fun.
Thought that Thomas Wayne was dead?
He thought he was dead. He discovered him. Thomas Wayne had been going back and killing a bunch of people involved in the drug dealer's ring, including Joe Chill, which is how this whole thing started. It was Joe Chill in the morgue. And Batman discovers that his father's still alive. His father's on Miracle-O. His father is super strong. And then once Batman dies against the Apocalypse Army, you know, from the beginning of the story, then Thomas Wayne takes over the mantle.
There is no DARE program in Earth 2. They need a DARE program.
No. I like the fact that, you know what? Go big. Go big and crazy in this book.
Yeah.
It is alternate reality.
Yeah. Go nuts.
You might as well have fun, but.
I mean, it could arguably say is that was one of the problems with, say, the Ultimate Universe was that they just hewed too closely.
Yeah. So Lois Lane is Red Tornado somehow. We haven't figured that out yet. And Thomas Wayne hooked on Miracle-O is Batman, and that's what we got.
Okay.
That's all right.
Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
Mm-hmm. Ain't no thing, baby. Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, when this comes out in trade, you can go to fanboy.com/Amazon. And you know what I bought on Amazon this week, Paul?
Yarnbjorn.
No, I bought the DVD of Quick Change, the underrated Bill Murray movie.
The DVD or the Blu-ray?
They don't. Oh, that's not the Blu-ray.
Okay. Wow.
They don't.
Wait, before we move on.
Yes.
What prompted this?
Paul was talking on Facebook about still not having watched Scrooged. People were taking the task for it. Quick Change came up in the conversation.
My cousin Steven recommended Quick Change.
And I remembered how much I love Quick Change, how it's a super underrated Bill Murray movie. And I looked on Amazon, and not only was it available, it was $5.
Still not convinced it's a real thing. I would have heard about it. It's got Randy Quaid and Bill Murray. I would have heard.
It is a good flick.
Davis, it's a great movie, and it's coming today, actually.
All right.
I'm going to watch that tonight. It's very funny. So you can go to ifilm.com/Amazon if you want to see that film or any other film. Buy it. We get a little piece of the action. And helps to keep the lights on, keep the show going. We appreciate that. Doesn't hurt you when it hurts Amazon. And meanwhile, you can also go to ifilm.com/registration where you cannot buy Quick Change, but you can become an iFanboy member for $3 a month or $30 a year. Helps us directly. And we appreciate everyone who does either one of those things. You are our favorite people, even more than Bill Murray, who we both do, three of us do love, except for Paul.
No, I love Bill Murray. So I'm actually going to do a switch up here. We should talk about Cataclysm Ultimate's Last Stand because Cap pulls a Randy Quaid.
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Yes, he flies his plane.
He flies his plane into the mouth of Galactus.
Galactus, yes.
Right, okay.
So one thing we did just mention is that the Ultimates didn't go far enough. And we see that now in Spider-Man, they are going very differently, which is good. But here, I think we're going to see that. I think in this story, we thought maybe it would be the end of the Ultimate line. It actually would be the end of many of the Ultimate's characters. I don't know that Cap is dead, but because they don't really wrap that part of the story up. He flies into the thing and we move on to something else. But
it's very, very drown your darlings. I don't know. Thor also gets thrown through a building.
That's no big deal, though.
So I was like, I don't know what that means for Thor, for Ultimate Thor.
He's probably fine, but I'm enjoying this still.
I think one of the things that was interesting is that whereas I think the last issue I was like, hey, this is a pretty good Mark Bagley. This issue I was like, oh, it's Mark Bagley. A little bit. I mean, and which probably makes sense because he's probably going pretty fast and doing a lot of stuff. I mean,
do you remember when you interviewed him on the video show and he wouldn't stop drawing for the interview?
Yeah, I do. I remember that. And it was like the first issue was pretty rough too.
Can I keep drawing during this? Well, I guess that's the only way this is going to happen. So.
I did like the use of the X-Men in this. I haven't really seen the X-Men. I don't read the X-Men books, so it was nice to see sort of what's going on, even though
short-haired
I'm reminded why I don't read the Ultimate X-Men books. Because
yeah, there was a whole lot. I was like, who's this Jimmy Hudson guy?
Yeah,
he's got claws. Look at that.
Right. There was a lot. I remember the last issue, there was a lot of weight, at least at the end, you know, with Reed coming back and saying, you know, I saw what life could be and stuff, and there's a lot of.
Did you guys read that issue where they went to the other side? We didn't talk about that. Where Reed and
isn't that
Spider-Man...
the last issue? We talked about that.
Did
yeah.
we?
Yeah.
No. I might have been drinking.
Okay. Well, this issue, there are a lot of moments that could potentially have that kind of weight, and it just felt very rushed.
This one felt a little more rushed, but I did. I am enjoying it overall. But this issue,
and that's visually, and also just in terms of the script, it's just kind of relentless. Like it's just. Thing happening and nothing, and that's sort of the point, because it's nothing is phasing Galactus. You're supposed to see
it's not a new thing, but I really do love the fact that he's just standing there building his thing, which is I believe what Kirby had him do. Okay, he's got a little device that is just at hip height, and he's working on
his got a toolbox. Yep. He's doing some welding. He stops for his lunch break. He sits down and has a sandwich.
Like the threat the entire time is a giant man working on something
in his garage.
Yeah,
it'd be great if the next issue he's like in shirt sleeves. He's taking off his tunic and he's in like his undershirt,
drinking a beer.
He punches his time card.
Like it's like a guy in his garage and there's a bunch of gnats swarming around him. And it's just kind of like, oh, man, it's hot in here.
I'm going to lose the light soon.
I think that'd be great.
Yep, I agree.
But I'm enjoying this. So, though, Paul, I'm very curious to see what you have to say about All-Star Western 27.
All-Star Western number 27, I put on the list because I saw, oh, my God, it's Superman and Jonah Hex. I should jump back into this because I haven't been reading it. But I have been curious about, because we talked about the last issue, right? We talked about it recently.
Yeah, last one.
Yeah, so that's why I read it, because I read that one randomly and I decided to read this one too.
Yeah, so it was like Jonah Hex in the future. I love that he has an American flag patch on the back of his jacket.
He's basically Dennis Hopper.
It's basically that, yeah. This issue is ridiculous. He goes to a museum, like a gallery showing about himself. Like, and so it's like an historical thing about all of his adventures, and it's got his hatchet in a glass case. And then he comes up to, you know, apparently he was displayed, like when he died, like they put his corpse on display.
Jumbo style.
Yeah, like, exactly. And they put him in this ridiculous, like
Hollywood,
like the Western jacket that your mom wore in the 90s, like with
Marty
all the tassels.
McFly went back in time, back when he wore the 50s.
Exactly. In the best of the Back to the Futures movies.
Whoa.
He's baiting you. Don't take it.
It's my favorite. Because it's got cowboy stuff in it. Anyways, so, and Jonah Hex is not having that. He gets so mad that he blows off his date, goes to a bar, gets drunk, gets on his chopper, and crashes into an 18-wheeler. It's ridiculous.
He's a new driver.
This is the week of comics about just ridiculous benders.
Yeah, this whole comic, it felt to me, and I don't mean this in a bad way, it felt like fanfic. Like, it was like, what if Superman came and picked up Jonah Hex and they just talked for a while? And I'm like, there's no reason.
Yeah, and Jonah Hex is like, why are you allowed to be who you are and like have all these powers? Yeah. And why aren't you on a cross somewhere? It's just like,
yeah, it was very odd. Although I'm not saying that it wasn't unenjoyable in some way.
It was a lot of fun. It was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous in all of the ways. I agree with you.
Always put your chips ridiculous on black, and you're gonna win every time.
Yeah,
and he's going back to the past soon.
I think he wants to.
He's like, I want to go back to the past. Superman's like, I can't help you out.
I don't believe that, Superman, and I think we'd all be better off if you let him.
If he flew back around the sun a lot of times.
Yep. You can only do that for love, though.
That's true. All right. Sledgehammer 44, Lightning War number 3.
Okay, so this is Mignola Arcudi, artist Lawrence Campbell, on a character that I find fascinating. You know, give Lobster Johnson a little bit of a rest. Give Baltimore a little bit of a rest.
No.
I love Lobster Johnson, but you got to use him sparingly.
They do.
There was a lot of Lobster Johnson miniseries for a while.
There's been a lot, yeah. So just
there's only been two.
No,
I've got those.
No,
trades.
That's not right. No,
I've got the Deadly Hand. It was the last one.
Well, there's probably they probably package a couple into one trade because they do a lot of two and three part and like one shots.
Well, there have been two trades worth of material.
Anyways,
like
this is about
years.
The guy who's like a suit of armor, and he's like just energy. He's just like, I don't know, some kind of Lovecraftian energy force. And there's a fight here, and the takeaway for this one is that there's a U.S., you know, bomber plane, and, you know, for the good guys, and then for the bad guys, there's a bunch of fighter planes, and one is piloted by a sumo wrestler. And it's played
that
totally
is,
straight.
It's aerodynamically just unfeasible.
Yeah, and he's a sumo.
It's a weight problem. You got to bring less munitions with you.
The thing that's important is he's a sumo wrestler flying the jet, and he's worn pants, but he still hasn't put a shirt on.
Oh.
So he's in the dungarees and he's flying the jet, and the Lightning 44 thing or Sledgehammer 44, whatever he's called. Grabs him out of there and electrifies all of him, like the fat off of he's just a skeleton. It's crazy. And there's like another, there's a Nazi thing that's also powerful, and it's all about energy and electricity and stuff. And I like this character a lot. And go back and read that first miniseries. It's
well, I'm not
going to
do it now
after
you made fun of Lobster Johnson, you jerk.
I love Lobster Johnson. I'm just saying, put him on the shelf for a little bit.
The next issue comes out next week.
A little bit.
Make me want him.
Yeah.
Lobster Johnson next week.
Look at that.
Invincible.
Invincible 108. This was the other book that I talked about when we were talking about Paradigm Shift. And
very careful.
Yeah. No, it's fine.
No, I'm reading a trade. Because
I know that. I know. I can do this. You won't. It's not a thing that you would know is coming. The thing is, it's like one of those things where it's a very good book, like it is, but it's sort of. It's just been doing this thing for a while, and Mark has had this existential crisis, and there was two things about this that were impressive.
Careful.
One, there was a very well written, and it felt like a very honest argument between Mark and Eve, And it was drawn. It was like it was drawn melodramatically, and there was like crying and screaming. It's but
drawn melodramatically.
Yeah, it was. There was
like tear stains on the...
very anguished faces.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, but okay. It really read like a real argument.
Well, you and know, I would say this about Kirkman and Invincible and Walking Dead is I think a lot of people I've seen a lot of people complain about the writing in Walking Dead, but to me, the writing in Invincible has always been very strong, especially the interpersonal relationship writing. I always thought that Mark, Eve fighting or whatever was always very real. Sounded very real.
Yeah, I mean it's not hard to take the imagination that like this feels realistic, and it's like she's like, you know, she's upset because he's leaving to go do a thing, and she's like, you're not thinking about the family, and he's like, that's all I think about. And I was like, okay, this is too close to real life. But it felt very, very true, and I was extremely impressed by it. Like they have to leave angry and whatever. Anyway, at the end of the book is a paradigm shift, and I don't know how long this is going to be the case, but theoretically, this could be the book for a while, and it completely shifts the character out of where we were into another thing. And I think it was, I got to the end, I thought this is absolutely the right time to do this.
Right.
This is exactly what the book needs, and you go somewhere else for a little while, and you make this the status quo for, you know, however long. And I was like, that's a really good, and it's just like the time shift in Saga, like, you know, just change everything. There's no reason you can't. It's an ongoing. He wants the book to go on forever. So, you know, why do you always have to stay in the world we're in? Let's go see what else there is. Really well done. Really,
so
really
everybody good. Animals or
listen, you don't want to know.
Okay.
You don't want to know. Yeah. East of West. That's it. They're animals. Yeah, East of West. So,
Number nine.
My stack of books that was left over from the last month it contained an inordinately high proportion of Hickman Image books. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm starting to realize that while I really want to like East of West, I don't really so mm-hmm. much. And I think that I might be done with it. It's
You've always had that problem with these books, though.
It's true.
Fine.
It's true.
Not everyone has to like everything, but you've always...
Exactly.
You've always
not
tried,
everybody
tried
is smart.
Hard,
not everybody
really
is...
Stick around.
You know, what it is my favorite stuff that he has ever done, my favorite stuff that Hickman has ever done have been short miniseries. Mm-hmm. Pax Romana was, you know, three issues or something like that. And I feel like these stories might be things that would be served as 6, 8, 12 issue series, and that's enough. Like there's a story there, but I don't know if it has to be 30 issues or whatever, but... You know, this is 9 issues in, and we're building towards this thing, and everything's really serious, and there's no sense of humor to it, which doesn't always have to be. I can't pin my finger on what it is that doesn't grab me because I want to like it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I do.
There's a lot of mythology here, and a lot of stuff that happened in the past, and going back to that, and that's kind of a wrench in the forward momentum of it.
Yeah,
at least in my understanding of it, about this
plotting.
Issue, I really liked the sequence with the Oracle. Oracles are always creepy when they play, like, do stuff with how they're blind or they don't have eyes. And in this one, you know, the Oracle absorbs like Death's eyes, like uses tentacles and pulls the eyes out of his head and into hers, and it's pretty gnarly. It's a great looking book.
Yes.
There's a lot of great stuff in here. It's not always super coherent.
No, it isn't.
It's hardly ever, but but there's stuff that really makes me want to get it. Like I'm with you on that. I really want to like it.
Manhattan
a book where
Projects is in a similar position for me right now. I really want to like it a lot, but I just don't. I can't tell what the path is. I guess I don't know. I don't know what we're headed for, or if I'm going to care about what it is we're headed for.
I don't know that the answer is for it to be a 6-issue miniseries, because there's a lot here.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, but maybe it's about trimming it down, though. And
possibly, yeah.
But maybe that's a bad – that doesn't work with his thing. There's people who like his stuff, and they like the way that this goes. You know, and I won't put up with this. I won't go along with it like on a superhero book. I'm like, okay, I don't, you know, it's fine. But on these, I feel like he's got a little more freedom. And maybe I'm just trying to get back to some of the earlier stuff of his that I really liked. It's good, but it's just not grabbing me. Like I put off reading it. That's never a good sign.
Connor, what's going on in Batman and Robin Annual #1?
Number two, actually, I was wrong on the script there. I wasn't going to read this originally. I haven't been reading the book itself, but I saw that it was a Batman and Robin flashback tale to when Dick Grayson was Robin. Of course, I will immediately read fan? That. And shut up. And there's three things I have a problem with this issue. One, two of them are displayed on the cover. First, the cover looks like Batman's punching Robin.
That's not
problem.
Nice.
Problem number one. Number two is looking at this cover, this issue, and then also looking at some of the Marvel stuff this week. I had a thought this week that we're entering a dark period for costumes in comics. In that the Marvel side, you've got all these characters wearing the movie costumes, which look silly.
What's
Captain
funny
America,
is that the
Hawkeye, et cetera, et cetera.
The thing that made the movies possible was they had to find a new sort of way to make the costumes work.
Right.
And now it's working retroactively the other way, and it is a negative effect.
Right. So on the Marvel side, I think the movie influence is hurting those characters' looks. I think Captain America looks stupid. I think Hawkeye looks stupid, especially when they give him the triangle glasses for some reason.
I love when Connor says stupid.
And then the DC side, you know, we've been well documented even when we were enjoying the new 52, the costumes. But I mean, look at that Robin costume. Yeah. We're mired in some sort of awful early 90s cost design period right now, where everything is overly designed. Look at all these random lines and pieces. What is that piece on his knee for? I mean, there's a reason why there was the reaction to that early 90s period was to go back and simplify everything in comics. And, you know, the costumes went back simple, got more simple, and went back to basics. Everybody went back to what originally worked so well. And I can only hope that'll happen eventually here, too. Because
that Tim costume was the best one as a
good
sort
costume.
Of modern Robin that looked effective and not over. You're right. What are those little V's all over the damn thing?
I don't know, but it made me annoyed. That, you know, design's important in a visual medium. With these characters, you identify them by their appearance, and this is who they are. And
I think there's some good stuff though. I think
there will always be good stuff in the mix of the bad. And I don't say everything is bad, but I just thought about that looking because I read a lot of Captain America books this week.
Yeah.
Like three or four of them where he was in it.
It's a problem.
And every time I see him, I just groan because it looks so. I mean, he looks better in the movies. He's not even wearing the movie costume in the comics. He's wearing some weird hybrid version.
I mean, you take the three different Thors; those look great.
Yeah,
right.
Thor's a costume that, interestingly enough, when they redesigned it a number of years ago, I guess it was Olivetti. That costume looked great. That really didn't take away from the Kirby design that had worked for so well for so long.
You mean the Coipel design?
Yeah. What did I say? Olivetti.
Olivier Coipel.
Coipel. You know that. That one really worked, and a lot of them don't. But I don't know. What does Thor look like now? I can't. There's been so many different versions of it now that I'm trying to remember.
Well, it doesn't look like a costume. It looks just like he's Thor. I don't know. Declan Shalvey.
That is not a good cover. You're right about that.
But, I was gonna say Declan Shalvey did a good one on a Boomerang.
Yeah,
and the Moon Knight stuff looks good.
Anyway, the point is, it is distressing that I don't like looking at a lot of these characters because they're bad. I thought the story of this was fine. The third problem is the idea that anybody thinks that Damian was the best Robin is a lunatic. That's my only problem. I mean, this issue sort of set the idea that everybody thinks he was the best Robin, which is stupid.
Yeah,
but what is best? What does best mean?
I was a little like
Tim's the best Robin.
Tim is the best Robin.
It wasn't Robin anymore, Paul.
Huh?
Is there no Tim?
He's Red Robin.
But he was never Robin in this.
Yeah,
he was never Robin. He was Red Robin. That is how stupid the timeline is.
Yeah.
In my continuity, Tim was the best Robin.
Yeah. I think that you're right. I think you're right. And then the other thing, are we going to keep, why? I don't know why we're revisiting. It's an annual. I know that's what they do in these, but I was just like, I don't want to read another story about Damien. Like you got rid of him. So get rid of him.
Right.
They're
memorializing him. You want to write stories about him, keep him the hell around and make it interesting. But don't get rid of them because it's not working and then keep going back to it. It's weird.
Right.
Move on.
Move on. So those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Now there's been a lot of movie casting news this week and in the past couple of weeks we haven't really talked about. So we thought we would lump them all together and talk about some of the upcoming or far in the future comic movies whose casting has been announced.
Okay, so Paul Rudd as Wonder Woman. What do we think?
let's start with that movie then. Last week before Ant-Man casting news finally happened, we finally figured out who was playing Ant-Man and which Ant-Man it would be. And we found out it was two Ant-Men. Michael Douglas would be playing Hank Pym, and Paul Rudd would, in fact, be playing Scott Lang, the current Ant-Man. And this is for the Edgar Wright Ant-Man movie, which comes out 2015.
Now, that Robert Kirkman created. No, he didn't create.
No, it was the other one. It was the middle.
Okay, you're right. And they're not going to let him be in a movie.
No.
Well, we could do this, and it'd be a good story and everything, but we'd have to play Robert a lot of. Can it? Okay.
Yeah. I'm excited for this. I know everyone was hoping that Paul Rudd would be playing Hank Pym, and I don't really have any feelings either way for Scott Lang. I like the idea of flashing back to a 60s style. You know, you've got to believe they're going to flash back.
Oh yeah.
And see Hank Pym in action as a young man, which means you're going to get another period piece, at least a couple of scenes as a young Hank Pym, which will be awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's part I'm most excited about.
Yeah, and I like the idea of, I love Michael Douglas. I think it'd be great as sort of the retired hero aspect of it. I think this is cool.
I just keep seeing Liberace.
Exactly. Well, even then, it'd be cool. I like the idea this is sort of playing with
I've made myself very small. No.
I can fit inside
a very small space.
I think it's cool. I like this one. I was very excited when they announced this.
Yeah,
it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar Wright is a hell of a filmmaker, but he's also incredibly his own voice, and it's not like anything else. I'm really interested to see what it will be. I'm not sure it will be good, but I think it will be interesting.
No. I'm not even saying
it's gonna be bad. Fun. If it fails, it will be because it was ambitious.
Right.
Is my point. And I find that to be laudable.
Right. I have not seen this latest one. I haven't yet seen a movie of his I haven't enjoyed, but
the last one to me was like The World's End was like you had old friends and you hadn't seen them in a while and you were really looking forward to go seeing them and you got there and the conversation was just kind of boring.
Right.
Yeah, it needed jokes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I went in and I was really I was excited for it, and I like all those performers. It wasn't especially funny.
Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't funny.
Now, getting back to this, I like the idea of Paul Rudd as a superhero main character. I like the idea of possibly seeing Paul Rudd in the midst of the Avengers at some point later in the future. I think that'd be a really funny thing to I think he's such an oddball. You know, he's not like the alpha male type. He's kind of the Bruce Banner, but times 100.
The Bruce Banner butt man. Times,
butt times 100.
Hello.
So I like that. I think
they should definitely. You know when they did the thing with I don't know if it was Mighty Avengers or what, but like they had these big group shots of the Avengers and they snuck one of the Ant-Men into him. Like he was really small. Like I was there that time, but you just didn't see me. Like that'd be fun if they played with that with the. Like if they went back to the original,
he's been there the whole time. He was fighting the Battle of New York. He just was so small.
Yeah, and we just missed him. It's like the Nikki and Paolo episode of Lost, except in my mind this would be a good thing instead of that, which wasn't.
Well, that's exciting. I'm curious to see if they're going to have Wanda Van Dyke, if she's going to be a contemporary of
Janet.
Who's Wanda? Wanda is Scarlet Witch. Janet Van Dyne. Wow.
I was like, did I miss something? What are we talking about?
I'm multitasking. I've got four screens going right now. So it'll be interesting to see if they're going to have Wanda, whether she's going to be a contemporary of Michael Douglas or a contemporary of Paul Rudd. Listen, I've got
you said Wanda again. Going.
What are you, Oracle over there? What are you doing?
I got a timer on one screen. I got the script on the other. I got information. There's a lot of things happening. I'm monitoring many things.
Let's talk about the movie that everybody's in, Superman versus Batman.
Right.
I think I'm in this.
Are you?
I don't know what I'm doing. Everybody seems to be in it. I'll feel very bad if I'm not in it.
We're not entirely clear if Ben Affleck is.
So this is the film that, A, most importantly, has been pushed back a year. So it was supposed to originally be seen in 2015. Now it's 2016.
I don't see a lot of fans going, oh, man.
We could all be
I
dead.
Wanted that sooner.
I think it's interesting that they are. I mean, it's going to be shot next year and it'll come out the year after.
I think it's fascinating that no matter what happens, Warner Brothers superhero movies just can't do it. Like this is so par for the script. You know, this is what happens to every one of them. They just get pushed back, take too long, and people don't agree, and they don't know what it is.
So there's speculation at this point, like, is it even going to be called Batman versus Superman, or Superman versus Batman, which has been a placeholder anyway, but is it just, is this the opportunity to call it Justice League or something like that? Because that's what it's sort of turning into.
No, it's from what I know, and I know a couple people in here who are one step removed from the movie in two different places, one on the creative side, one on the producing side. It's definitely a Superman vs. Batman movie. Okay. At least, well, here's the thing. It's being completely reworked, which I find the casting interesting because last I was told is they started from scratch again on the script. So who knows what the story is going to be at this point.
No, but, so who knows who's
the
in
cast
it?
Fits then, you know, like if they're redoing it. But
So this week was announced Jeremy Irons is playing Alfred Pennyworth and Jesse Eisenberg is playing Lex Luthor. And previously, we had Gal Gadot announced as Wonder Woman and Jason Momoa announced as an unknown character, which I've been told two different characters from two different people close to the project. So
Starro.
I think it was from what I've told, it was changed. And I can't say anything I promise I wouldn't say. But
Mr. Mitzel Predilek.
I was told the same character by two people. And then later on, once the announcement was changed, that the movie date had changed, I was told his character might change again with the story. So the main thing is everything's up in the air right now. Mm. You know, the story could completely change. These actors could drop out because it's a year from now. You know, actors drop out of projects all the time.
When there's no script.
Out. Yeah.
Okay. So, Jeremy Irons. I really like Jeremy Irons.
Mm-hmm. It sounds
younger Alfred, which is interesting.
Well, it sounds to me exactly. I can see the comic book Alfred.
Yeah.
The guy that Scott Snyder writes every month. I can see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's perfectly.
Sure. I never would have thought of.
Was he Special Forces or something
Special
like
Forces.
That? Yeah, I mean, he was a bad boy.
And Jeremy Irons is 65. Let's not, you know.
Yeah,
not,
no, it's like, perfect.
He's super young or anything.
But he's also like.
How old's Michael Caine?
Trained guy. Michael Caine.
Listen,
I said slightly younger. I didn't say, you know.
Okay.
Michael Caine will blow your bloody doors off.
Okay.
He's 16. Yes, Al.
So there's
Michael Caine's 80.
Nothing really of interest to talk about with Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. I mean, that's pretty basic.
What's interesting is that that's a very specific casting for a script that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Because I think he would make a fine, smart bad guy as we've seen before. So it's not
right.
You know, it's not the one that you've seen, but let's put it out there, you've seen that one. Well, right. I don't understand why people want to keep going back and seeing the same version of the same thing over and over again.
Hey, who are you talking to?
Put a different take on it.
Yeah, no, how many movie
Lex Luthors have there been?
Right.
Just two, I guess. But
versions, there's been two,
and then Smallville.
Smallville, and then there was Lois and Clark, and yeah,
why not?
There's been a bunch of different versions.
So do a different thing.
Yeah, no, I think the idea of doing it younger. I mean, they did it with Smallville, but also, you know, he's Superman's age. So that works in the historical context of a character
that's
being
the same point.
Age.
That's a really good point.
Yeah, yeah, I looked it up.
I guess he is. Yeah.
So that works in the Smallville way of them being contemporaries. And
Lex Luthor is awful nebbishy. That's very strange.
It'll be interesting to see if they actually do go with the bald route. They didn't always go with the bald route. You know, Gene Hackman wasn't bald until the very, very end of the film, and John Shea wasn't bald in Lois and Clark. So they didn't necessarily have to go that way either.
I can totally see it in the room when they're talking about it and saying, let's, you know, the rumor was Cranston. Maybe they even like thought about that. Let's say that was even a name that was on a whiteboard or something. And like, Cranston's older. It should be somebody younger. It should be like Mark Zuckerberg. Wait a minute. Why don't we just cast Mark Zuckerberg? Like, why don't we just actually do that instead of doing something like
it? For an interesting thing. Could maybe he'll be a different kind of Lex. Maybe he'll be a Lex Luthor who was an internet guy. You know.
Oh yeah.
Could be all kinds of things to go with.
Kind of Lex Luthor.
You've never seen before.
Never thought of before.
When
are we going to not do that?
Never.
It's been 11 years.
I'm not going to freak out about it until I see more. I know more. There's really nothing to know. He's a good actor. I like him. I've seen him. Everything I've seen him in, I've liked him in.
It's very interesting because he was
a recent episode
sort of
Modern Family.
Yeah, he was great in that.
He was always sort of the not Michael Cera for a little bit there.
You know, it's
funny.
He's a
different kind of actor than Michael Cera.
But he's got a thing.
But they had similar roles for a time.
Yeah.
And so now I'm thinking about Michael Cera as Lex Luthor, and I'm sure that will be on Funny or Die or something.
I'm thinking of Michael Cera from This Is the End as Lex Luthor. And that's
that would work, actually.
I would like
that would work.
So, you know, we'll see. I'm not going to freak out about any of these people. I think they're, you know, I don't know anything about Gal Gadot. I've never seen her in those Fast and the Furious
films.
Are
fun. I watched those recently, those past few. And I don't know. It's not entirely evidence of what she would be like in a Wonder Woman role, but.
That's what a Wonder Woman role would be like.
Who knows? Because
I know what it won't be like. Or I guess I mean the pilot is what I mean.
Right.
Like, right.
It's not gonna be like that, which is fairly standard.
But it's gonna be interesting. I'm not excited for this movie, but I'm also not unexcited. I'm almost excited more for the car crash aspect of whatever it's gonna be.
I hope
it's good though.
I hope that if it's bad, it's better bad than Green Lantern was bad.
Well, Green Lantern was not so much bad as just boring.
That's what I mean. Like, it was just like, it happened. I don't remember anything about it.
Right.
It's just, it's mixed in with all the other Ryan Reynolds movies in my head.
Right.
Right? I know! Just doesn't matter.
So.
He was late for the kid's birthday party. That's all which makes him a dick.
I caught some of it on HBO the other day, and there were sequences of it that are okay, but in the end, it's just boring. But
there's some inspired choices here. That's, you know.
Yeah. Casting is good, I think.
Yeah. I have no real problem with Ben Affleck as Batman just on paper. We'll have to see how it turns out. But I like Ben Affleck. I like him as a filmmaker.
I can't picture it. I have a hard time picturing it.
I do. I don't have a problem with
it. I can't picture it, but I'm just saying I'm not averse to it. Because I know there are people who are very knee-jerk, like, that's horrible.
Right.
I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, because you say it's horrible because immediately you picture a stiff-necked Daredevil.
Right.
That's weird. But he wasn't the worst part of that.
The one sort of eyebrow-raising thing for me for this movie, which was like weeks or months ago, was when they announced that he brought on the Argo screenwriter and I don't know if he's even still, you know, on it at this point.
Well, I think
with
that's
all the changes, but
I don't know for sure who's doing the rewrite, but they're doing, like, you know, page one rewrite on this movie. So I'm hoping that they recognize they need a stronger story. But then again, a lot of people loved the first one and it made $700 million. So maybe they don't necessarily recognize that, but it's going to be interesting. That's for sure. Now we get 2 more years of this. Of people bitching on Twitter about it.
So this is like a little time capsule. Like, a year from now, it's totally different cast. You know, people are, there's so much time for people to drop out.
Yeah. Especially a guy like Affleck who makes his own films. I mean, I think the worry was that pushing it off a year would then mean the inevitable Justice League sequel would happen during the time that Ben Affleck's supposed to be making his next film.
And he's 56.
I think that's part of the character is supposed to be old and, you know, retired. So that's
nobody's going to be really old. He's going to be Michael Caine old by then. I mean, the rate that these movies move at,
right?
You know, they take for, you know,
Marvel's really good about getting them out quick.
Marvel moves fast, and I mean, one thing that I think you're seeing here that is taking a lesson from Marvel is that Marvel built a cast of interesting characters and actors, and they kind of built those. They built the existing characters around them to a certain extent. You know, it seems now in retrospect that Robert Downey Jr. is the perfect Tony Stark, but it was still a departure. You know, he's much more flamboyant than I think Tony Stark was. And now the comic reflects that. Or you take something like Jeremy Renner as Hawkeye or even, you know, Ruffalo's quirky Banner.
Right.
You know, all those things were created because of the personalities of those actors to a certain extent. So maybe it's not a bad idea to just put some actors in roles,
right?
You know, and try to create something out of it.
Yeah,
try to create something out of that. It's not a terrible idea. It's worked before, and maybe one of the things about DC stuff is that they're treated like such sacred cows that it never seems to work,
right?
You know, and the best, like, if you think about the best things that we've seen in terms of DC. Adaptations are things like Heath Ledger as the Joker, which was not on book. You know, it was something that was created by the screenplay and the director and the actor to do a new thing with a concept, and that worked brilliantly. So maybe this other stuff could too.
Yeah,
right. We'll see.
I'm open to it. And they also talked this week about Captain America 3 and Thor 3. I'm open for Ragnarok and Thor 3. I really am. And play with that Loki stuff.
Biggest thing to take away from all of this is that it's the repeated cycle of a rumor comes out, fans get attached to that rumor, and then when the rumor doesn't pan out, everyone freaks out that it wasn't that thing. And that's just, you can't get attached to it. I mean, everyone's saying that Thor 3 is going to be Ragnarok, but maybe it won't be. It could just be another rumor.
Some other kind of Niflheim I never even heard of before.
It'll be some other kind of thing you never heard of. It'll be fun.
I'm just saying it would be a natural, that's all. I'm not saying that that's definitely what's going to be.
Well, yes and no, depending on. We have no idea where the story's going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's not just coming off of Thor 2, it's coming off of Avengers 2.
And, right.
And the other things, so.
I think the most important thing to look forward to is the fact that in 2 months, Captain America 2 comes out, and that looks awesome.
It does look great, yeah.
So.
2 months?
April.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's early. I was shocked, too.
Oh,
it's the first week of April, yeah.
I'll go see that.
And then August is Guardians of the Galaxy. We've not seen one bit of that movie.
That's August?
Yeah.
Holy poop.
Yeah.
So is that why... these are going to be very elementary questions, but I don't pay attention to it because it changes so much.
Uh-huh.
Is that why Chris What's-His-Name was not on Parks and Recreation for that period of time because he was shooting that movie?
Yes, and that's why he came back thinner.
See, and what's funny...
They made a joke about him not drinking beer anymore.
Yeah, well, what's funny about that is that I thought... I'm watching, I go, he must have been off shooting that movie, but I go, that's awful soon.
Yeah.
And then they August. Did it very fast. Well,
it does feel fast, but yeah.
Marvel is like a speedboat, and Warner Brothers is like a tanker. And Marvel's... can move fast, change direction fast, turn around quickly, do all the kind of things where it's really hard. You know, Warner Brothers moves like a tanker, and you got to turn it around, and it takes forever.
Well, what Warner Brothers seems to be trying to do is to make something bigger, and Marvel has built it in a certain way where they don't have giant actors. They have a couple of giant actors who are tentpoles, but you know, Hemsworth was relatively unknown. Chris Evans is not a huge star. Chris Pratt is not a huge star. They're right. People that they can get to work for these things for cheap, relatively speaking. Whereas,
cheap. I mean,
yeah,
these guys are making nothing on these movies.
Yeah.
Except for Downey.
Ben Affleck, you know, got to work with him. He's an Oscar-winning everything.
True. So, yeah. All right, so those are interesting films. We're going to talk about them more, I guess, as the years go on. In Superman's case, as the years go on, I'm sure there'll be more casting news. We still have Flash and Green Lantern to cast, so look forward to that. And we're talking about Captain America: The Winter Soldier in April, so that'll be fun.
Yep.
What was Jeremy Irons? What was his name in Die Hard? He was not Han. Was he Klaus Gruber? Because Hans Gruber was his brother.
Right. It's Klaus Gruber. Klaus Gruber.
I may have just poisoned
Keith Gruber.
Him.
Klaus was the...
Simon. Simon was his face.
Simon
name.
Gruber.
No.
Simon.
Was he actually Simon? Was
Kevin
that
Gruber.
Because he had like the stutter and he would... I really love Die Hard 3.
Die Hard 3 is great.
That's my point.
I'm going to look at this
while
you guys...
What if we put angry Sam Jackson in this? I think that's a good idea. I think he should follow John McClane around.
No, it's Simon Gruber. Klaus was one of his henchmen.
Oh, okay. Oh, Klaus was one of the... He was in the first one.
Wasn't no, the, Klaus the was Simon Gruber's henchman in Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Well, there was definitely a Klaus in the first
one.
Guys,
German,
we have a very important voicemail that we have to get to here, so...
I'm really having more fun talking about Die Hard 3.
Just wait till you hear the voicemail.
Okay.
Hey, this is a call from one of your big fans in Scotland. Just unfortunately, it's Tuesday today, so I've got to wait tomorrow for my comics, so I thought I'd give you a bell. Could possibly get a shout-out to something bloody awesome, Edinburgh's first comic and sci-fi convention happening this April on the 12th and 13th of 2014. There'll be lots of comic book guests, sci-fi guests. There'll be Leo Manco's first ever European convention. It will be Nombre Fogo coming over to meet up in Scotland with... fellows with the Scott, Alan Grant, there'll be lots and lots and lots of going, lots of Doctor Who guests, Star Wars guests and such like. Just taking a complete punt, guys, because iFanboy, massive podcast, and I'm a massive fan, iFanboy. So, there we go, guys, thanks so much, and cheerio. Ta-da.
Cheers. That sounds great. I wish I could go. I honestly do. I'd love to go to Scotland.
I didn't get all of that.
Oh, you? I
got most of it.
I got the enthusiasm behind it.
Let me ask you this. Did you hear the word Norm Breyfogle?
Oh, was there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You should keep listening to that.
So if you
have a finely tuned ear for dialect that I have.
This is very thick. I got most of it. So if you're in Edinburgh, there's going to be a comic convention in April. So there you go. There's some information for you.
If you're in Edinburgh, there's a comic convention in April. I translated that.
Ah, perfect.
That was patronizing an awful lot.
He also didn't give us his name. But he did tell us where he was from through his voice.
Well, he was speaking for all of Scotland. He's representing the nation. That's what I got, but
as one voice together.
That's a weird Scottish bylaw.
Do we all have Scottish roots, or is it just me and Connor?
I probably have a little bit.
I'm Scot-Irish, so
there's a touch. There's like an eighth.
Kilpatricks are from Scotland.
My family crest is a woman holding a severed head.
What?
Really?
It's so badass.
What? What's,
Connor's is your motto is one of my favorites. Oh,
well,
I know
it's the Irish motto, wasn't it?
Well, I looked all over Ireland for something with your name on it, and that's when I realized that it's all been a lie.
Yeah, it's Scotland.
Not Irish at all. No, but
my mom's side is her grandmother was from Ireland. My dad's side, the Kilpatricks, came over from Scotland in the 1700s.
Okay, so oh yeah, the Kilpatrick family motto Christmas. Is "We make sure." Connor, is that okay? Yeah, hang on, let me look.
Yeah,
we're
okay.
Good.
Mine is a belt turned into a loop, and then inside there's a woman holding an anchor, and then in the other hand, a severed head, and it says "Garde bien," which means guard well.
That's crazy.
Mine is
a knight. I've got a knight. I make sure. That is not the most badass motto.
Mine is a tree on a slight hill, and then occasionally it's shown with a flaming sword.
Wait a minute. In the crest, there's a knight, and there's a bloody sword. So I make sure means we make sure.
Oh, you need to take care of them.
Yeah,
like you go through, and all the corpses on the ground, they poke them to make sure they're not getting back up.
Yeah, the Kilpatricks are a borderland family.
That's
why there's some Irish in there.
The Flanagan's motto is "I have fought and conquered," which, looking at my life, is a bit ironic.
There's also, I mean, all these models are about fighting, because that's how things were in the...
Well, it's about posturing to a certain extent.
Right.
So. Mm-hmm.
I like the bloody sword on that. That's awesome. Well, there you go. So thanks for calling in and giving us the update on the Scottish comic convention. In the meantime, if you want to call us or send us an email, contact@ifanboy.com is the email. 888-FANBOYS, 326-6697 is the voicemail. And we are gathering together our best relationship emails. We're going to take our... You know, pick out the best ones that we got in from the emails and the voicemails. We've gotten some of each. So keep sending those in. We're going to do that probably.
Valentine's Day is coming up.
That's actually a good time. Let's do that. So get yours in before Valentine's Day. And for the show, the week of Valentine's Day, we'll do these relationship emails. So make sure you send those in.
If you're thinking, is this too embarrassing? Send that in.
That's yes. Exactly when you should be.
We don't have to
it
even
in.
Use your name. If you want to put something embarrassing and ask, we not use your name, we will definitely do that. Also,
send sex advice. I've been listening to Zan Savage. I think I can fake it.
Yeah, we'll do sex advice. We'll do relationship advice. Here's the thing. We don't want you to send in your relationship advice. This may be unclear. We've had some people do that. We need questions and not advice.
We clearly don't need any advice.
Yeah, we don't need advice. I mean, come on.
We have fought and conquered.
We have fought and conquered. I get it done. I mean, it's fine.
You
so,
make sure. You don't do it. You just checked that it had been
it's done.
Finished.
So send
did,
us in
did Thompson finish that work, Kilpatrick? Hang on, let me find out. Yeah. Yeah. No, or no, no.
Nope, done yet.
No, he's got some more to do.
All right, let's plug some shows, some things.
Hold on, let's look at the calendar and give them a deadline. So
all right.
Valentine's Day is the 14th. So we'll do that show, for the show that comes out on the 16th. So you have until February 12th to send in your relationship questions or sex questions or whatever questions. For that show. So February
12th.
You got 2 weeks to get
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
We're going to set you up good.
Yes. All right.
Get ready for a surprise.
Plug your shows, Paul.
Plugs and announcements. All right. Over on Fuzzy Typewriter, you can check out some weekly podcasts on True Detective. Connor was on one of those. and Justified as well. I'm very sad that True Detective is taken off for the Super Bowl. Oh, well. Let's see. And then over on CBR, Comic Book Resources, check out every Sunday. There is a Sunday Conversation, which is a text interview with, it's not by text, like it's not, I don't use fours for four or anything. I'm talking to comic book creators, writers and artists about the things that interest them. In the most recent one is Evan Doc Shaner, who's going to be the artist on the upcoming Flash Gordon book. And you'll be seeing a lot on Adventures of Superman digitally. On the Comixology and elsewhere. And then we got a big book explode, the first of our three-part discussion with special guest Scotty Young talking about the Akira manga by Otomo. We talked about the first two volumes of that, and we haven't read past that yet, so we don't have spoilers for the rest of it. Then when all is said and done, we'll be talking about the movie as well. So that'll be over the next few weeks and months.
You're just going to get in front of mics and yell Tetsuo at each other?
Pretty much.
For like an hour.
That's how it starts. That's the podcast opens with Tetsuo.
40 minutes of that.
Yeah.
Good stuff. You can also listen to the Talksplode that was released this last week. Was it last week? I don't remember.
Last week.
That was myself, Charles Soule, and Joe Mulvey talking about making comics and how they do that. If you're interested in how the comic book creative at various different levels functions, we talked a lot about that. We covered a lot of ground.
How the sausage is made.
It was very much that. It was. I mean, it's like, how do you do seven ongoing books? And he was like, I'm friggin' great. What do you want? And I was like, it sounds like you're bragging, but it's true. Shit. It was a good show. It was fun, and I was glad to be able to get it done and get it out there.
Cool. And then next week, Justice League War comes out, the next DC Universe animated original film, and the animation brand trust will be to get together talking about that at some point next week. We're not exactly sure when that show is going to come out yet. We have to have some scheduling hurdles to jump through because one of our members is in a foreign country. So once we figure that out, we'll get that to you next week sometime.
For those Scottish listeners out there, scheduling!
So in the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com to comment on this show and find out all of our other podcasts. They're all there. The Talksplodes, the Booksplodes, all of them are there. You can comment there. And you can follow us at twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy, as well as individually. I'm C.S. Kilpatrick, Paul is Fuzzy Typewriter, and Josh is J.A. Flanagan.
That was nice.
Thank you.
You can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com or send us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Come on. Let's hear about your love lives. That's what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're into this kind of thing, you can write us a review in iTunes, even in Scottish iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcasts. Spread that iFanboy love all around.
Well, there you go. Thank you.
Being succinct because we're running long.
Like in my head, I put a couple of seconds. I was like, it's over. Shit, no one's saying anything. We've been on this show for a long time. We need to go. I have to go. Bye.
Guarde bien.